My name is David, and I am an alcoholic. I drank for a number of years, almost 30 years, and I was in and out of AA for that same amount of time. So it was a roller coaster ride for me. I never did these steps before until almost 8 months ago, and it's totally changed my whole life. If somebody would have told me a year and a half, almost 2 years ago, I'd be standing up here in a room full of people, introducing the speaker, I'd have never thought it possible for me. And I spoke here last month, too. I'd have never thought that'd be possible. It was all possible through these steps of this program. And anybody who's just sitting here and has never done these steps, hasn't gotten a sponsor yet, I highly suggest it. It'll totally change your life. And as it has changed mine. And the speaker tonight is, I've known her for probably 7 or 8 years. I've seen her help people. I've seen her work this program. And one of the things I really noticed about her is anytime she sees a newcomer, she always goes up to that person and helps them out. And it gives me joy when I see it because it makes me realize what this program is all about. It's about people with sobriety passing on to people that are new. And I strongly believe that. And tonight, I'm glad that Susan's here speaking. Susan?
Thank you very much. Hello, everybody. My name is Susan, and I'm an alcoholic. And I'm getting over being sick, so I'm going to have the Kleenexes. And that way, if I start crying, I'm going to have the Kleenexes. And I'll be happy to pass them around. And it's kind of funny, because last year I celebrated 13 years. And that was impossible for me. I knew other people could do it. I saw lots of other people that had long-term sobriety. I knew it was working for them. I knew they could do it. I didn't think it was ever going to be possible for me. When I came in, I got sober in Miami in this big, giant group. This is a big group? Yeah, that was big, honking, giant group. Birthday night is 300 to 400 people. You want to talk about intimidating, because I'm scared standing here. I'll tell you that. 13 years sober, and I'm scared every time I speak. And that's okay, because sobriety for me, the majority of the time, is about walking through my fears. It's not that I don't have them. Fear is another of the God-given emotions, just like anger and every other one. As long as I walk through fear, I'm going to be fine. And so I do that. When people ask me to speak, I intuitively go, no way, uh-uh. Yes, I will. Thank you. That's what comes out of my mouth. And that's because of this program. And as I was doing some meditation today, I came across a couple of things that just really hit me. And one of them is a quote by Mother Teresa, and it's in a non-conference approved thing, which is why I'm just going to read the quote. But it's an amazing quote. Loneliness and the feeling of being unwanted is the most terrible poverty. That was my life. In sobriety, there are times when that is my life. Earlier this week, that was my life. You know, I got sober, and I hear a lot of people say, and a lot of people think, most of them don't say it because they're too scared to, they think that they get sober, you know, you come in, you put down the drink, and life's going to be wonderful. That's not been my experience. Life is amazing. And there have been so many miracles that I can't even count them. Wouldn't try. Because it doesn't matter. But there's also been a lot of that tough life. You know, the normal life experiences, deaths, illnesses. And I'll get into some of that. I have no idea how much, because I always ask for God to give me whatever words He wants to give me. And He works it out. I never know if it's going to be short, going to be full-time. I don't know. And I don't have to. And that's one of the miracles. I'm a control freak. But I let God have it when I'm speaking, and that's one of the miracles that my higher power that I call God has performed in my life, is that I can just let it be what it is. I can, at 10 or 12 years sober, speak for 15 minutes and know that that was it. That's all God had me sharing that night. I don't today feel that level of poverty. Today, I feel amazing. It's incredible because this is a chance for me to be of service. Because there's going to be somebody in here who needs to hear something I've got to say. That's why I was asked to speak. That's why I am always willing to speak. That's why I do the Four Step Seminar, and I've been doing it for years. I have a lot to bring to that. I never thought I had anything to bring to anything except chaos and turmoil and bitchiness. I was real good at that. And I still have my moments, of course, like anyone, because I didn't get perfect when I got in here either. And no matter how many times I've been through the steps, I still didn't get perfect, and I personally don't believe I ever will. And that's okay, because I also found out in here, perfectionist that I am, that I can be human. I can make mistakes. And there's something that my sponsor tells me a lot, and I need this reminder a lot, and I say it because it reminds me, there's not a knot you can tie that God can't untie. And that is true in my life. Every knot that I've tied, and I've tied some doozies, because I was a sailor, I can tie some knots, and, you know, those you can get undone, but I can tie those alcoholic knots, too. The ones that are just, you know, this big old giant ball of rope, you don't think you're ever going to get unraveled or thread or, you know, take your analogy, it doesn't matter. I don't have that sense of poverty today, that emotional poverty. As far as financially, I do. I don't have a job right now. I got laid off. And there have been a lot of life challenges in the last 3 months. Massive, massive challenges and changes, but God's getting me through them. And the only reason God's getting me through them is I keep suiting up and showing up, being willing, you know, honesty, open-mindedness, and willingness. These are indispensable, is what it says in the book. I don't do so good at all three of them all the time, but I do them to the best of my ability, and I have a support system who helps keep me on track. As far as what it was like, I've been sober a lot longer than I drank. And, you know, there are a lot of people who'll say, I spilled more than you drank, and that's true. Because I only drank a few years. It didn't take me long to be full-blown. It took me about a year to have been arrested twice for alcohol. It took me 3 years to have had an accident. That there's no reason I should be standing here in front of you. I should have died. Numerous different reasons in that accident. That's what my drinking did for me. I hit a city bus. It was stopped. If I hadn't been in the tank of a car I was in, and there hadn't been a God, a higher power, who wasn't done with me yet, I wouldn't be here. The doctors didn't think I would live. They didn't think I'd walk. They had no hope for me. But there was a higher power who still did hope. Had hope for me, and I made it through that. A lot of reconstructive surgery, and that wasn't enough to make me think, you know, I should quit drinking. After that, the Navy, my commanding officer had 14 years sober in Alcoholics Anonymous. He strongly suggested, forced, it's a translated word, me to go to the programs and go into the program and go to meetings. I didn't get it then because I wasn't ready. I was 21 years old. I'd been legal to drink for 2 months. I wasn't done. And the meetings I went to, I'd look at all these people in their 50s and 60s, a few, some in their 40s, you know, one or two in their 30s, and I'm 21, and I'm going, I'm nothing like you people, you know, because I didn't try and relate. I compared. I compare my outside, 21-year-old, to their insides, and or what they said, their outsides, and, you know, I didn't have shit in common with those people. And the simple fact is, I just wasn't done. I wasn't done drinking yet. I didn't think I was a real alcoholic. So I went out for some more research, and I was in the Navy. I terminated shore duty and went to a ship. And I was on a ship for almost 2 years, one of the first women on combatant ships. You know, that's one of those things that is amazing in my life, because I can look back on it, and even all the chaos, you know, that was a cool experience. And we got to have a lot of cool experiences while I was on there, and we got to have a lot of scary experiences and tragic, and it was nuts. I mean, full-blown nuts. Our captain was crazy. But I continued to do that research, and there was a good portion of the time I could control my drinking. Very large percentage. 90, 95, 98%. But what happened is every time I took a drink of alcohol, I wanted more. I always wanted more. I might stop myself after one or two. That night I might be able to control it and stop it and say, no, I'm only going to have two. But then there were those times when I couldn't do it. I'd want to, and I couldn't. The fact that I always wanted more, the craving kicked in. That's part of the disease concept of alcoholism, is once an alcoholic takes alcohol in their body, it sets off the phenomenon of craving, where we've got to have more. That was a challenge for me when I was getting sober, because I didn't drink all the time. I didn't drink that much. My last drunk was like 4 beers. I wasn't even drunk. If I'd known that, I probably would have done it better and, you know, at least drank 12-pack so that I had a good story for my last drunk. Because that's the kind of alcoholic I am. You know, four and a half beers, that's not good enough for your last drunk. Thank God that I didn't, because God knows I might have been off to the races and I might not be here today. The times that I did drink, being arrested twice at 19, you know, 2 years before you're legal to drink, I don't recommend it. It's not a good thing. The cops tend to think you have a problem with alcohol when that happens, and the Air Force won't let you in, because they won't let you in if you've had... You can get a waiver if you've been arrested once. And I was trying to go into the Air Force. My waiver came through within a week. I think it was right after I got arrested for the second time. Second time was a DUI. The Air Force said, nope, sorry, bye-bye. So I went to the Navy. No offense to any Navy people, but... I knew the Air Force was the chair force. They had better food. They had better facilities. And, you know, I wanted the best because I deserved it, damn it. You know, that's the way I live my life. The best. That's what I deserve all the time. And anytime something didn't live up to that, okay, fine. I'll go somewhere else. And I went into the Navy. It was an incredible experience for a lot of different reasons, but I got introduced to the program there. When I got out, because the Navy, I didn't want to make it a career. I was tired of officers, another facet of alcoholism, I was tired of officers that were the same age I was, most of them not anywhere close to as intelligent as I was, telling me what to do. Like, you know what? The thing that separates me and you is a piece of paper. Fine, I'll go get the piece of paper. And so I got out of the Navy and decided to go into the reserve so I could make some extra money. So I went over to the reserve center when it was on Primrose, the Navy Reserve Center, to do drilling. You do 1 weekend a month. I walked in, first person I saw, that commanding officer from New Orleans. That same one who had 12-stepped me. And he took me and asked me to go into a room with him. And he said, are you still sober? And I said, no, I'm controlling my drinking. He didn't laugh at me. He didn't say anything, except the program is there if you ever decide you need it. And I've looked for him in the 13 years I've been sober. Many times I've looked for him, because he is the reason that I am standing here in front of you today. He's the reason I'm alive, because he had read Working with Others and those later chapters that we tend to forget about in the big book. And he knew that he did not want to spoil a future opportunity. I will always be grateful to him for doing that for me. Because when the time came and I was ready, I remembered a gentle, kind person who didn't tell me what I had to do, didn't tell me you need to be there, didn't tell me any of that other stuff, because I'm a little bit rebellious, and anybody who knows me is smirking or laughing or, yeah, I'm rebellious as hell. That's just the deal. I learned it from my dad. I came by it honest. When you grew up in my family, yeah, rebelliousness ran rampant in my family, as did alcoholism, both sides. When I came in this time, it was one of the only times I've learned from someone else's experience. I was involved with somebody at the time because that was my latest fix. You know, I'd done geographical changes. This is going to fix me. I'd done boyfriends and got married and, you know, other stuff. This time I was involved with somebody, and he had a problem with alcohol. So I was in college. I'd gone to Valencia and graduated with honors and made straight A's and, you know, all that stuff that really honestly doesn't mean a whole lot. Except that I was smarter than I never applied myself prior to that. When I applied myself, I could do a whole bunch of stuff. When I actually worked at it, go figure, I could do a whole bunch of stuff. But I went to the University of Miami on scholarship from Valencia, and he was drinking too much. And, it was bothering me because he'd keep me up at late at night. I had to go to class the next day. I can't make straight A's if I'm up all night every night. And so I found out about meetings, and there was a Coral Gables group in Alcoholics Anonymous, if anybody's been to Miami. And so I went to meetings with him. I told him that I'd go with him for moral support. At that point, I still didn't think, at the moment, I had a problem with alcohol. And I went for moral support. And I've heard a lot of people say in a lot of meetings, when somebody says something that they don't have a desire to stop drinking, they'll run them out. I've seen people run out of meetings. Thank God the people who were in that meeting didn't run me out. Because if they had either run me out, said you don't belong here, if they had been unkind, probably wouldn't have gone back. And I'd probably be in an institution somewhere. They didn't. They just left me alone. When he got a DUI, something clicked in me, and I knew that my next step was death, someone else's or my own. I don't know how I knew that. I just knew. I instantly knew I was an alcoholic, something had to change, and that somebody was going to die. And I didn't really think it was going to be me, because that would be too easy. My fear was that I would kill someone else and have to live with that for the rest of my life. So fear is what got me into the rooms this time. Fear kept me sober for a while. It doesn't last. It will work for a short time, but it will not last, at least not in my experience. So I came in, and after about a month or so, I got a sponsor. She took me through the steps the way she'd been taken through them. I didn't go through the steps the first time the way they are in the big book. So I didn't get the relief that they describe in the big book. I didn't get all the promises they talk about in the big book. Because there are promises with every step. There are a lot of promises in the book. We hear the ninth step promises read a lot, but there are promises all over everywhere in the book. And so a lot of those didn't come true. I was still miserable. I wasn't drinking, but I was still miserable. And I moved back to Orlando. I didn't want to, but I couldn't find a job that I could support myself on in Miami. Miami's expensive to live in. And so I came back to Orlando, hating it. I hated Orlando. I don't want to be here. I hated it when I left. Never wanted to come back. And that was one of the miracles as I came back, because that was what God was directing me to do. I love Orlando. It wasn't Orlando I hated. It was that everywhere I went, I took me with me. And when I was in Orlando the first time, you know, I was there in all my glory, my alcoholic glory, which is, as anyone knows, it's not pretty. We're not nice people. We want to be, a lot of us, but we're not. And I came back. First thing I did when I drove into town is went to a meeting. I went to, I think it was the greenhouse when it was over on Fairbanks. And I went there, that was my home group for a while, and then the Orlando group was my home group for a while. And then I got a resentment against somebody stealing, and so quit going to meetings, which I do not recommend, because it didn't do very well for me. Close to my anniversary, though, I wanted to pick up a medallion, and I knew I needed a home group to do that, to feel, I felt like I needed a home group to pick up a medallion somewhere and to feel comfortable doing that. So that's what got me to Central, because I didn't want to go back to the Orlando group or Greenhouse because they were tied together pretty much. So I started coming to Central, and that was 10 years ago. And Central's been my home group since. This group has done a lot of phenomenal things. And that's one of the reasons it's kind of scary to stand up here and speak, is because Central is my home group. And speaking in, for me, speaking in my home group is the scariest. You know, a bunch of strangers. Well, actually, I did the seminar at the women's conference a couple of weeks ago. That was terrifying. But that's because there were so many people there, and, you know, it was a four-step seminar. Who the hell goes to a four-step seminar when they're at a conference? I wouldn't, because, you know, that's work, and I'm lazy, you know. I don't want to do the work. I never want to do the work. I just keep doing it because it keeps working. That's the difference. I don't have to want to. I don't have to want to stay sober. I don't have to want an inventory. I don't have to want to pray. I don't have to want to do any of it. I do it. Big difference. And there's a big difference in acceptance and approval, too. That's one of the things that I've learned from doing the seminar and doing so many inventories. Acceptance and approval are two completely different words. I don't have to approve of whatever it is I'm inventorying. Acceptance is where I find peace, though. And I want peace. I came in this time because I wanted some peace in my life. And I found it the majority of the time. I have my moments. I can create chaos with the best of them. Steve apparently knows. and there are a lot of people who do. But I don't create chaos anywhere near to the degree I used to. And it doesn't last as long. The moments of peace get longer and longer. And they last longer, and they come more frequently. The chaos is much shorter than it used to be. I used to spend years in chaos. Growing up, I was suicidal my whole life. I was suicidal until I took a drink. Once I took a drink, it gave me something to numb the pain. And then I wasn't suicidal. When I started drinking, my drinking took me to some pretty scary places. It put me in some pretty bad situations. And you never know when your drinking is going to take you. Anybody who's questioning it, you don't know. I know that today, I don't ever want to go back there. I don't. Tomorrow, I have no idea what's in store or how I'm going to feel. Tomorrow's not here yet. I have to live in today, and today, I don't want that life. Because in that life, I was a victim. I was a victim of a lot of stuff. Lots of stuff happened. And today, that's not true anymore. Today, I get to be a survivor. I get to be a person with a little bit of grace and dignity. And that's something I always wanted my whole life, was some grace and dignity. I didn't think it was possible for me. I grew up in church, knowing about God, believing in God. I knew there was a God long before I came in the program and long before I started drinking. I was terrified to turn my will over to that God, though, because from the time I was about 9 years old, I knew that God wanted me to be a missionary. And there's some people who've heard this before. Anybody who's been to the seminars probably heard this. But I knew God wanted me to be a missionary. I didn't want to live in Africa and not have anything, live out in the middle of the desert, and, you know, I'm not doing all that. Mm-mm. Not me. What I didn't know, though, is that my greatest fear was going to come true, but it was that it was also going to be my greatest blessing. Today I'm a missionary, but it's not in Africa for, you know, whatever church it is. It's in the rooms of Alcoholics Anonymous, to the forgotten of society and the trash of society. Because a lot of us, that's how we feel. A lot of us, that's how we're treated. Like we're scum of the earth and trash of society, and why don't you just get some willpower? I got willpower like no tomorrow. It never helped with my drinking. There were too many times that that willpower wasn't enough. And those times scared me. So I get to be a missionary today in many different ways. When I taught that that seminar at the conference, there were women from all over the nation there. Women from other countries, likely. I know there were a whole bunch of women, and they sold a whole bunch of CDs, which that freaked me out because I realized I was going to be recorded, and so that freaked me out really bad. Because then it was, you know, there's proof. I was a sailor, and so my language is not what a lot of people think it should be. You know what? That's their crap, not mine. Do I think it's perfect? No, not by any stretch of the imagination. But I'm not there yet, and today I don't have to be there yet. There's an analogy that I like very much and that I use a lot, and that is that everyone who comes into the program and comes into sobriety has a pathway. If you've ever seen a flagstone or brick pathway, take your pick. Each of the stones on it has a concept or a lesson. And the deal is, for us, those lessons are in different orders. We learn them in a different order. I've learned things that many of you in here haven't. But all of you in here have learned things that I haven't. Different lessons and growth opportunities. I don't like the word lesson, because for me, lesson ties back to that Southern Baptist vengeful God that I'm going straight to hell because I can't live up to what the teaching was. I don't personally today, and this is personally, believe in a God that teaches me lessons. And this is my personal belief. I believe in a higher power that gives me the opportunity to make mistakes and have some consequences and learn from the consequences. And it's, a lot of people would call that semantics, works for me. And that's one of the most amazing things about this program. We don't have to have the same concept of God, same God as we understood him, same concept of any higher power. Any higher power will do. All that's required is a belief that there might be somewhere, something, some kind of power greater than ourselves that can help restore us to sanity. I found that. And that concept has grown dramatically while I have been in the program. And I'm very grateful for that, because my God gets bigger with every event I go through. My God has allowed me to work through having been raped in my drinking, and come to a place where I have compassion for the people who did it. I didn't think that was possible, because for me that was unforgivable. I was never going to forgive them. Never. And through working, through doing inventories, I came to a place, and this is years ago, I came to a place where not only was I able to forgive them because of the inventory that's in the big book, Alcoholics Anonymous, we call it the big book, but it's Alcoholics Anonymous, the blue book. They sell it behind the coffee bar. I came to a place of compassion for what they must have been going through to do that to another person. Because I know I hurt a lot of people. I never meant to, but I hurt a lot of people in my drinking, in sobriety, all the time. I never meant to, and God helped me give them the same benefit of the doubt. And that's how I learned compassion. And by learning compassion for them, by inventorying everything that I've had to inventory, I also begin to learn compassion for myself. It's a byproduct. I don't work at it. I don't try. It happens when I work on all this other stuff, and I didn't believe that was true, but there's another thing my sponsor says that I firmly believe. We took actions we didn't believe in. I've taken a load of actions I didn't believe in since I've been in this program. You know, the 12 steps, whatever, yeah, those steps. I didn't believe those were going to work. But I was desperate enough for something to change in my life. I thought, you know what, I don't have anything to lose. Because, you know, it's, once again, somebody's going to die. Next time I have an incident, somebody dies. This program has been so full of miracles. Because in sobriety, I have been able to walk through situations that I didn't think people walked through sober. I didn't think people stayed sober through them. And I'll do a quick rundown of a 10-month period of time. And, well, actually, the rapes that I had mentioned earlier, I did that that inventory on 9/11, the 9/11. The inventory I had done a couple days earlier, I did the fifth step on 9/11 because I had told my sponsor, my birthday's 9/11. And I had told my sponsor I can't think of a better birthday present to give myself than freedom from those. And so I called her that morning after the towers had been hit and said, do you still want to do this? If you don't, I understand. Because everybody was so upset. She said, no, we're doing it. And on October 29th of that year, my dad was diagnosed with a horrendous form of cancer. My dad and I fought like cats and dogs, the stubbornness I talked about, many of the other character traits, otherwise known as defects. There were some assets too, but a lot of those came from my dad. But by then we had a great relationship. The work in this program had restored our relationship. And we died on amazing terms. He died. I didn't die. Anyway, sorry. He was diagnosed with a blood cancer. And in January, I saw this thing in the paper about the Leukemia and Lymphoma Society and a fundraiser they do. And as a couch potato, it's a fundraiser where you either do a marathon, walking or running, or you do a century ride, which is a 100-mile bike ride, or you do a triathlon, which is like it's a marathon, which is 26 miles. And I don't know, it's like long and a whole bunch of stuff. So Little Miss Couch Potato says, you know what, I'm going to do a marathon because I'm an alcoholic and I get all these bright ideas all the time. Some of my bright ideas actually are God-inspired, though, and turn out pretty amazing. In this case, it was something I could do because I couldn't do anything for my dad, you know. He had his thing to walk through and I could be there with him. I could be there for him. But I wanted to do more. And this program is, they train you to do either the century ride, the triathlon, or the marathon. They train you, and you raise money for cancer research. And so my bright idea, I started. I was doing some cross-training. I started that in January after my dad had been diagnosed. And actually, for Christmas, I made my dad a God box. Because driving down the road, I thought, you know, he needs a God box because he was having trouble. He was having a lot of trouble with his God of his understanding. And I called my sponsor and said, you know, I just had this idea, this bright idea, and I don't know how to do this. And she said, well, God gave you the idea. He's going to show you how. And he did. And that box is amazing. I had no idea I had, like, woodworking skills. And there are a lot of things in sobriety I've discovered that I had no idea I had. My higher power has shown me a whole bunch of stuff about me that I never knew was there. I made that box, and in that box, I wrote a letter to my dad saying how much the things he had taught me went into making this box and explaining why I chose the wood I did, because actually I didn't choose it, God did. I just picked out these two pieces of wood, and the wood people at Woodcraft, who are professionals, looked at me like I was on crack and said, you can't put those two together. I said, well, these are the two pieces. Because I was acting on God's direction, not theirs. Man said, you are crazy for trying to mix those two. But see, I don't live in man's world. whenever possible. I live in God's world. And they were the two pieces of woodwork are called lacewood and bird's eye maple. Lacewood has a pattern that is basically, it looks like a chain link fence. It weaves in and out. And bird's eye maple has little bitty teeny tiny knots in it. You know, like you see knots in pine. These are tiny, like the size of a pinhead. That box is absolutely beautiful and amazing. And I knew when I was writing that letter to my dad, telling him how much he meant to me and how much the things he had taught me over the years helped me, like patience. Because I had to do a lot of sanding. I had to do a lot of work on that box for it to be something that I would give someone for Christmas. But it also came to me, God told me why he had chosen those two pieces of wood. And that is the lacewood, our lives will weave in and out. We don't know the pattern of that. We don't know when, how, nothing. And the bird's eye maple was that we're not going to know that until we have the bird's eye view with God or our higher power or whatever. That box meant so much to my dad. And it did to my mom, too, after my dad passed away. But started doing the marathon in January. I shattered two vertebrae in my back in February. February 13th. And that was a horrendously painful experience. It's kind of funny because I did a rollerblading. Nobody thinks rollerblading, you're going to do things like, you know, shatter two vertebrae in your back and come close to paralyzing yourself. I had no idea. I went to the doctor because it still hurt. The ER, I was strapped to a backboard with my dad standing at the bed. And that, for my dad, with the cancer he had, was horrendous. But he was there for his little girl. I went to the doctor, and he said, yeah, people over 20 aren't supposed to rollerblade. And my response was, I wish you'd told me this 2 weeks ago. But he told me I could still train for the marathon. And so I did. I continued training because I was walking. And walking was the only activity I was allowed to do. Because it was in the thoracic region, there's no brace. I had a lot of restrictions, a lot of things I had to do, and a lot of medications to manage the pain. Because if you break your back, it's massive pain. Massive. Wouldn't wish it on anybody. In the very end of April, I was diagnosed with melanoma, which is one of the deadliest forms of cancer there is. And my dad, once again, is the one who drove me to have the melanoma cut out of my leg. My dad, with cancer, getting ready for a bone marrow transplant in a month for his cancer, is the one who stood there at the foot of the stretcher with my broken back, drove me to have the cancer cut out. My poor mother, who went through all of this, because she had a husband of however many years, 34, 30, something like that, and a daughter with all this stuff going on. My grandfather passed away in March, and my dad passed away in August. My dad's last waking moment, I was standing by his side. And that's not me. Number one, they were cleaning his ventilator tube. I think it's ventilator. Put him on a vent. Anyway. Yeah, that's nasty. It's creepy. Gross. Oh, just the thought of it now makes me want to puke. But God suppressed that urge in me that makes me nauseous at the thought of anything like that. And I was in there. I was holding one hand. My sister was holding his other hand. And that was the only time we were in there when they were cleaning the vent. You know, we let them do their job. But we were in there, and as drugged as he was, he woke up. He wasn't supposed to because of the medication he was on. They don't want people on a ventilator waking up. But he did. So I got to tell him I loved him. This man that I fought tooth and nail with, and I was talking to somebody on the way over here, we came this close to blows when I was 24, me and my dad, and I know I'm a girl, but I was brought up a tomboy and working on cars with my dad and all kinds of other stuff. We came so close to blows, but we went from that in a few years to me holding his hand and telling him I loved him. That was his last waking moment. I'm not capable of doing things like that because I'm too selfish. You know, I want what I want. I want to do what I want. But the the higher power of my understanding and through the step work, I was able to do that. That was a long period of time. Not once in there did I think about drinking. Not once. Never occurred to me with all that life going on. And there have been a lot of other times in sobriety. Lots of things people would call tragedies. I don't. They're challenges. Because if I call them a tragedy, then I can get in the pity pot, or then I can become terminally unique. I can become different. I can't afford that today. I had a heart attack at 35 years old. They don't know why. I'm not sure. That was a life-altering experience. I can tell you that. Because it doesn't run in my family. No diabetes, you know, no cholesterol problems, none of that stuff. What it taught me is to live every day as if it is my last. That includes inside and outside of this program. And through a higher power's direction, I'm able to do that. I've gotten to do some amazing things in sobriety that I never dreamed. You know, like finishing a marathon. It's 26.2 miles. It's a long blooming ways. And what's ironic about the marathon is you hit a wall about mile 16, give or take. And I hit that wall at 16. The only thing that got me across the finish line was this other lady. She hit a bigger wall than I did. I was going to drag her across that finish line. Service work got me across the finish line for that marathon. That's it. Just trying to get her across. And God put her there to help me get across. Because all I wanted to do was give up. I was exhausted. With all the training and everything, I was exhausted. Sobriety has been good to me. I've had dreams come true that I never really thought would. Lots of dreams. I have a Harley everybody has that reaction. Especially the bikers in Central, they're like, what? I never saw you riding a Harley. Well, you don't know who somebody is unless you get to know them. That was a dream I had for a long time. They just didn't know me well enough to know that. That's one of the things that I've been blessed with, is that bike, and I don't know where it's going. I don't know if I'll end up having to give it up because of life, current present situation. That's not my deal. That's God's deal, because it's a thing, and as long as I stay in God's world, He's going to take care of me in whatever manner I'm supposed to be taken care of. It doesn't look like I think it should look like a lot of the time. I shouldn't be laid off after 11 years on the job. Half of my adult life I spent at this job. The other half I spent in college and the Navy. So it's kind of scary to be all of a sudden out there going, oh, shit, what am I going to do now? How am I going to pay my bills? You know, all that stuff they talk about. But I also know that there's a higher power that's taking care of me through all of this. There's been a lot of life stuff. Part of my family isn't speaking to me because they don't like what I'm doing. A relationship that was supposed to end in marriage, move, retire together, move to Tennessee, gone. But those are those life situations, and I hope they don't happen to you in the time frame these ones have happened to me. But they're going to happen. And I know that for me, as long as I keep a higher power and this program at the forefront, that those life situations work themselves out. Those knots untie themselves, whatever knots they are, whether I tie them or somebody else does, they always work themselves out. This program has not only kept me alive, it's given me a measure of peace I never thought I could have. And if I can have it, I know that anyone else in here can too. I thought I was too bad. I'd done too many bad things. I had too much shame for the things that had happened to me. I wasn't good enough. But I found a higher power that I was good enough for. And I have to be reminded, that's why I still have a sponsor and I still work with her. and I work with other people who have what I want or who are living the program. I don't mess with the people who talk the program. It's real easy to stand in a meeting and talk the program. I did that year and a half I was in I was in the rooms the first time. I talked it. I could recite everything backwards and forwards because of my memory. I didn't know any of it, and I certainly wasn't living it. Today, I try and live it. Don't do it perfectly, never will, and that's okay, because my higher power, there's a phrase in the book, God does not make too hard terms for those who seek him. I love that phrase, because that phrase is where I get to be human. I get to make mistakes, and my higher power brings blessings out of them. Every one of my mistakes, my higher power brings blessings out of them, whether it's for me, or it's for someone else, or it's for a message that I can carry to someone in the future. You know, each one of the things that have happened, if somebody has a heart attack at a really young age, I'm uniquely qualified to help them walk through the feelings afterwards. Because let me tell you, it's scarier than hell, because you don't know what's going on. And we all get our experiences that we get to help people walk through. Those are our qualifiers. They're the things that make us qualified to help someone else walk through them someday. I wouldn't have asked for them, but at the same time, I wouldn't trade them, because they brought me where I am, right here, right now, this moment. To the outside world, if you ask my mom, what she would say right now is that my life is in absolute total chaos, and I am circling the drain. Those are her words. Pretty much a direct quote. She loves me, because that's what moms do. And she's worried about her little girl. Doesn't matter that her little girl just turned 40. She's still worried about her little girl. But I have a higher power. It's bigger than what I think, what she thinks, what anybody else thinks. I have a higher power that, as long as I rely on that higher power, miraculous things happen. There's some words that I do my best to not use. Never, always, promise, and guarantee. Those are very powerful words to me. I said I was never going to go skydiving. I jumped out of an airplane about 14 months ago. If there'd been anything to grab onto, wouldn't have happened. But I did it anyway. I also got to drive a race car for my 40th birthday, which was in September. 600 horsepower race car. I've never watched racing. It puts me right to sleep. But it does. It's great sleeping. It's just droning. But I got to do that, and man, how cool was that? Because it was a dream of mine. It was something I wanted to do. I'm terrified of curves. I'm terrified of that kind of 600 horsepower. But I'm a noise junkie. And I'm a power junkie, sort of. And so I did it anyway. Scared, I did it anyway. Oh, it was one of the most amazing things. Because it was walking through more of those fears. And it was living life. If I died tomorrow, there'd be no regret that I had a chance to drive a race car and didn't. There'd be no regret that I had a chance to jump out of an airplane and didn't. I try and live with no regrets. And I don't do it perfectly, but I do it to the best of my ability. And that's all because of the gifts of this program. The gifts of this program are because I keep working the steps. I keep inventorying. I never want to write out the fourth step. I never want to do an inventory. I'll tell you that now. I don't want to. Because I'm always afraid that my sponsor's going to say, okay, you're just too bad, I can't help you anymore. I know that's not true, but that's what my head tells me. And I don't want to deal with whatever character defects are coming up. I do it anyway. That's the difference. I don't have to want to. I just as soon not stand up here in heels and talk to people. But that was the next thing in front of me. Here I am, doing it anyway. And that's what sobriety is about to me, is doing it anyway, no matter what my wants are. Thank you very much for your attention.